Tonight was the first AEW Dynamite in the month of December, and this is your review for the said first show in December here. Your first AEW Dynamite review in the final month of 2021. I am the Solemn Monster. I hope you guys are having a great night. That was not a finish I was expecting to this show. I thought that was a completely unnecessary finish to tonight's episode of Dynamite. We went from what I thought was definitely not as strong of an episode as the one we got last week. It was definitely a couple of steps down from last week. And then all of a sudden, we go from like 0 to 100. We end the night with a flaming table, people on fire. What is going on here? I'll tell you what's going on here. Cody Rhodes is feeling the heat from these crowds. Well, he's literally feeling the heat at the end of the show tonight. But what's going on is that Cody is not getting these very kind reactions that he used to be getting. And so he seems bound and determined to not turn heel. He is trying to win these fans over. He thought he would go above and beyond tonight in Atlanta. Maybe Atlanta has a special place in his heart because of his father's history in the city of Atlanta. But got a mixed reaction in that match tonight. And I think Cody is trying to win the crowd back over in his favor. And he goes out there tonight and he does this ridiculous stunt. Brandi Rhodes makes her return. We haven't seen her in a while. And she, for some reason, shows up in a disguise. I'm not quite sure why. I guess for the big reveal. That was kind of goofy. And then sets a table on fire. Lighter fluid. And Cody suplexes Andrade off the top rope down through a table. Andrade, by the way, completely missing the table. Cody doing his best Mick Foley impersonation. He's trying to pop the crowd. I just thought it was stupid and completely unnecessary. We also found out tonight that Hangman Page is going to defend his AEW World Championship in 2 weeks. We are getting the Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite on December 15th, and it will be Bryan Danielson challenging Hangman Page for the AEW World title. Surprising. I thought they would hold off until maybe the first episode of Dynamite on TBS at the beginning of the new year. We have Battle of the Belts coming up right after that, but they're not wasting any time here, so we're getting our championship match in 2 weeks. Like and subscribe. We got a lot to get into here from this show tonight. A very mixed bag. More good than bad, I thought, but a mixed bag here on Dynamite tonight. Hit that thumbs up button. Help boost this video. Super chats are open. Let me just mention something real quick here at the beginning, because we've been getting it. Everybody likes to have a lot of fun here on these streams, and we always hang out at the end of the review, and we all have a good time here. There have been a bunch of kind of sillier non-wrestling super chats. We're going to try to keep that to a minimum. I will read, you know, everything that you send me, not out loud, because I want to try to keep the goofier stuff off the stream here. I will shout everybody out who does donate. And I thank you, by the way, for those of you who do drop a super chat. So you will be acknowledged, but you might see me skipping over the reading of some of the goofier ones. You got wrestling super chats tied into wrestling, tied into the show tonight. Even some less goofier non-wrestling ones, that's fine. But just be aware that I may not be reading some of them out loud because some people have been getting a little carried away with it. But send them on in, and we shall do our best. Also, one more note I want to mention before we move on here. For those of you who are channel members, brand new RSPW Rewind episode went up yesterday, episode 36. It's been a few months. It's been a while since we've had an RSPW Rewind. And if you are a channel member, you get it right now. You guys have it exclusively through Friday. On Friday, it will drop for everybody else, but it's a good one. 36 minutes going back in the time machine, so if you missed it, definitely go back and check that out. If you are not a channel member, this is one of the perks that you get. Early access to special features like RSPW Rewind. We already had one new channel member sign up tonight. Shaquan, was it Shaquan? I think it might have been. Shout out to him. So go ahead and check that out. Best wishes to Jim Ross. Good old JR was not on the show tonight. He is, of course, undergoing radiation treatment for skin cancer. He's got 22 treatments. I believe he's had the first couple already. And so best wishes to JR. He is hoping to be back at the end of the month for the final Dynamite of the year. They're going to be back at Daly's place in Jacksonville. So hopefully he'll make it back by then. That means things are going well. Let us hope. Justin Roberts was also missing tonight. Dasha Fuentes took over as the ring announcer. The only thing they announced, Excalibur on commentary said that he was wishing Justin and his family, I think he said that, you know, they're in our thoughts. So, I mean, that to me sounds like a death in the family. I don't know. They didn't specify whatever it is. Hopefully everything is okay there. They had the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page. He was the first one out to sit in on commentary for the opening match, which was the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, one-on-one against Allen Angels of the Dark Order, number 5 in his hometown of Atlanta. No other city will you get loud chants of Allen Angels. Only in this man's hometown, and he got Allen Angels chants on this show. Shout out to Angry Magma for becoming a Sound Of channel member. He'll be checking in on that RSPW episode, RSPW Rewind, as soon as we're done here. Clown music and all. So, they open with this, and of course, as I mentioned, we now know the date for the championship match between Hangman and Danielson. And I guess it was established before the show that the two of them could not touch. They were not to engage with one another, so there was going to be no physical confrontation between Hangman and Danielson. Danielson suplexed Angels, suplexed them into a cross arm breaker. He turned it into an arm breaker. Angels got the rope break. He sent Danielson to the floor, hit a tope suicida, followed by an Orihara moonsault. We've seen Hangman pull that off in most of his matches. There was a moonsault pressed by Angels that missed, and Brian connected with the running knee, but he did not go for the pin. In fact, he waved it off and said, no, 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 no. He wanted to punish this man a little bit more. So instead, he grabbed the arms, he starts stomping a mud hole in him, and then he applied a knee bar for the submission win. Kept the knee bar on for a while. He probably kept that thing locked in for a good 10 or 15 seconds. Finally, he lets go. And Hangman wants to go down, but he's got to restrain himself. Tony Schiavone goes down to the ring. And Tony Schiavone is going to interview Danielson. Of course, Danielson takes the mic and basically interviews himself. And he says, you know, last week I knocked out Colt Cabana's tooth. This week I tore up Allen Angels' MCL. He's got no MCL anymore. And next week, he knows the Dark Order has a member from Long Island, and he's going to kick their head in. I believe there's actually two Dark Order members from Long Island. We know John Silver is one. He's getting the match with Danielson next week. I believe that Alex Reynolds is also from Long Island. I don't know what part of Long Island he is from. I believe John Silver is from Wantagh, I believe. I was just in Wantagh, actually, a couple months ago. Visiting a cousin. I didn't know John Silver was only a couple of doors down. So he threatens basically to cave his head in next week. And then in 2 weeks, he's going to take the championship in the home of the Dallas Cowboys. They're going to be in Texas, Garland, Texas, for Dynamite. Hangman gets very upset about all this. He decides to go down to the ring, and he starts to go down. John Silver races out and says, no, 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 Hangman, you can't. Can't go down to the ring. You can't touch him, but I can. And so John Silver storms down to the ring. As soon as he gets down there, though, Danielson powders out to the floor. Guy knows how to get heat. And he goes up the ramp, and he goes face-to-face with Hangman. Now, they're not going to touch. They're nose-to-nose on the ramp. And Danielson says that he would slap Page right now, but these jerks don't deserve to see it. And as he went to go walk off, I don't think he realized how close he was to the edge of the ramp. He almost fell off the ramp. Poor Arn Anderson did fall off the ramp later on during the main event. Thankfully, the drop from the ramp was only like, I don't know, a foot and a half, 2 feet. So Danielson almost fell off the ramp. Poor Arn Anderson, he was not as lucky. But thankfully, he's okay. So we don't have to wait very long for this match. Obviously, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great match. I don't think that we are going to see Bryan Danielson handed his first loss in that first match. I say first match because the way I see things playing out, now that I see they're doing the match earlier than I expected, I don't know if this match is going to have a 60-minute or a 30-minute time limit. I think usually for championship matches, I believe it's an hour. And I don't know if they have the guts to do it. But I could see them going to a time limit draw. Now, I know they did that with Danielson and Hangman, or rather Danielson and Omega, back at the Arthur Ashe show. And 60 minutes is even longer than the 30 minutes that those two went. So it's an ambitious thing. You don't know, you know, ratings-wise and attention-wise, can you hold the audience for 60 straight minutes with one match? I think if they were ever going to try something like this, I could see it happening with this match and going to a non-finish that necessitates them bringing it back one more time, either on the first Dynamite on TBS or at the Battle of the Belts. January 5th is the first Dynamite on TBS. January 8th is the live special on TNT. I believe we're going to get a match between Hangman and Danielson on one or both of those shows. To get there, though, you've got to have some kind of a finish that necessitates there being a rematch. And I don't see Danielson winning the belt and then they come back and he immediately drops it back to Hangman. For Hangman, who just won the championship, to lose it in his first defense is not the way to go. As much as I love Bryan Danielson in this heel role, I love it. And part of me kind of, you know, under different circumstances, I would love to see him hold the AEW championship. But this would absolutely not be the right time to do that. So I am wondering if they have the guts to go ahead and do a 60-minute draw on the Winter is Coming show. And part of it may also depend on how many other matches do they announce. They're not going to announce a full card, and then they go an hour, and, you know, two or three matches don't happen. So we don't have the full card yet. We don't know. We'll know more by next week. But I definitely do not believe this will be the only match these two have. You've got those two big shows coming up at the beginning of January. They're definitely bringing this thing back around. But the whole purpose of this is for, in the end, Hangman gets the rub by being the first person to defeat Bryan Danielson. That is how this should play out. That is how I believe this is going to play out. You can drag it out a little bit more. We got a vignette for Miro. And Miro was standing just all white. He was standing in some kind of white space, just plain white backdrop. And he was thanking his God for revealing to him what he really is. This is, of course, in light of him losing. He lost in the Eliminator Finals at Full Gear to Danielson. He said, the lines have been drawn. He will invade heaven and turn the ground red. And he said that he was rejected when he wanted love, and now he would bring fear. This was the word of the Redeemer. It sounds to me like Miro is declaring war on God. So, I guess, get ready. Maybe they'll announce that. Winter is coming, right? Miro versus God. Well, how long has it been since we've seen God out there for a match, right? 2006? It's been a while. Been 15 years. God has been retired for 15 years. And it looks like he might be about to make his return. CM Punk, one-on-one against Lee Moriarty. Punk comes out, cult of personality, everybody in Atlanta's losing their minds, going nuts, and Punk hits the ring, and then we hear MJF's music. It's amazing. The moment you hear the opening chords of MJF's theme song, the heat that it brings in, it's great. MJF comes out to do commentary. He was wearing a fantastic Hanukkah suit. I must acknowledge this. I actually must find out where he bought this. I might have to buy one myself, even though, even when it's not Hanukkah, I might wear it to the next House of Glory show. Actually, we have a House of Glory show coming up in less than 2 weeks. So, happy Hanukkah, by the way, to everybody who is celebrating. We are in the middle of Hanukkah. It was a little bit early this year. Don't have my my dreidel. Well, I have to go out and buy a dreidel and spin it here on the air. He said Punk looked on commentary now. MJF is talking about Punk, and he says he doesn't look good. He looks haggard. And he said that the CM in CM Punk stands for cooking meth. CM Punk does actually look like somebody who I could believe would be cooking meth, especially with the bags under his eyes and everything. And he just was ragging on him for letting Moriarty get any offense in at all. He said, this is sad. Look at them. He's struggling with someone like Lee Moriarty. This is just pathetic. But this was a great showcase for Lee Moriarty. And I figure coming into this, that's what this was intended to be. This wasn't so much a warm-up match for CM Punk. Whereas the Danielson match, that was a warm-up for him in his title match with Hangman. This was meant to be a showcase for Lee Moriarty, another one of these young guys, like a Daniel Garcia, who they obviously see something in and think, okay, he could have some potential here. Let's see how he does. Let's put him in the ring with a big name like CM Punk, live on television, live on TNT, and see if he sinks or swims. He went out there, and he tore it up. I mean, he was running wild. It gave him more offense than I would have given him. They gave him more offense than I was expecting. But it follows a pattern that we have seen with maybe not all, but most of CM Punk's matches. I think tonight, including tonight's match, I believe Punk has had 8 matches so far. Since he debuted in August, he's had about 8 matches undefeated so far in AEW. And it was very similar to a lot of the matches that he has had. The one with Darby, the one with Powerhouse Hobbs, the one with Daniel Garcia, where he gives his opponent a ton of offense. It is not a one-sided squash. He gives his opponent a lot in these matches, and he struggles to make the big comeback, and then just in the end, he pulls it out. That's what happened with Hobbs, right? I mean, to some extent, we saw that even with QT Marshall last week. And I definitely would not have had Punk going 11 minutes with QT fucking Marshall. But we also saw a little bit of that with Marshall last week. Again, ton of offense. And then at the very end, he sneaks into GTS. And just by the skin of his teeth, he wins the match. And that's the pattern so far for a lot of these CM Punk matches, where when it's over, it looks like this guy's been in a war. But if you're a Lee Moriarty, and there's a lot of people watching who don't know who the hell this guy is, you come out of it going, whoa, okay, you know, this kid showed me something. And that was the whole point of this. Punk hit a springboard crossbody. Moriarty rolled through for 2. He locked on a crossface, but Punk fought out of that. There was a great spot where Punk tried for the Pepsi twist, and Moriarty countered out of it with a Pepsi twist of his own for a near fall. I like that spot. Punk powered Lee up onto his shoulders in the end, hit almost a desperation go to sleep, and got the win. After the match, MJF gets on the mic, and you knew that what we were going to get this week couldn't possibly match the intensity and the excitement of that first face-to-face confrontation on the mic that we got last week. So if you were expecting something on that level, then you were disappointed. This was nothing compared to what we got last week. This was the sequel that was okay, but not nearly as good as the original. Not that I expected it to be. But he got on the mic, and he said, I guess the only thing you're the best in the world in nowadays is trying to get in Britt Baker's pants. This is after Punk put over Britt Baker in their first promo battle the week before. And I already saw some people in my replies on Twitter talking about how that was like their Sunny Days moment with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels back in 97. Not exactly. Not exactly, but I can understand why people would make that comparison. There really is nothing today that compares to the legitimate level of disgust that Bret Hart had for Shawn Michaels, and probably likewise Shawn Michaels for Bret Hart back in 1997. I do miss those days. I do miss those days. Everybody's all working together. That's what we need more of in wrestling. We need more people who legitimately do not like each other. We got to get CM Punk and Colt Cabana on TV in a feud together. We need people who legitimately do not like each other so that it bleeds through and it feels genuine and it feels real on TV. That makes for the best feud. We need more people in backstage brawls in the bathroom pulling their hair out like a bunch of little girls. Oh, man. Punk said that MJF was wearing Larry David's pajamas. And QT Marshall and Lee Moriarty are better than MJF, and he knows it. He told MJF to bring his needle dick to the ring, which is the same insult he used on him last week. MJF said that Punk needs him more than he needs Punk. giving him a spark that he hasn't had since 2011. Next week, MJF said he's going to win the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal. You kind of forget that he's got that diamond ring. It's like an annual thing, I guess, but they don't really talk about it. He uses it every now and then to cheat in his matches. So they're going to have a Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal in Long Island next week. He says, Long Island, where he is from. Of course, he is from Plainview. He goes, Long Island, where I'm going to be better than Piper in Portland, better than Brett in Canada, and better than CM Punk in Chicago. He insulted Punk's dog, Larry, who I guess was there, or at least he made it sound like his dog was there. He goes, I hear this mutt barking in the back. And he warned CM Punk, and he said, if I hear this dog again, or I see this dog again, I'm going to put him to sleep. And all the dog lovers online I saw were freaking out. Oh, he stepped over the line. He insulted a dog. Who fucking cares? Who cares? That line was fine. Stop. Just stop. So Punk didn't like that, though. You insult a man's dog. Look, if they bring Larry out on television, then I'll have a problem with this. That's just shitty television, because that's going to give me reminders of what we went through in, 2002, with the WrestleMania main event built around a dog named Lucy. You remember Lucy? Oh, you remember Lucy, I'm sure. Triple H, Chris Jericho, Stephanie. Really, it was a WrestleMania feud between Triple H and Stephanie, co-starring Chris Jericho, who was like in the background. He was the champion, but he was in the background going, hi, I'm here. It was really about Triple H, Stephanie, and a dog. Remember the dog got run over by a car? They had the dog on TV. If they put Larry on TV, then that's a bit much. But Punk didn't like the dog line, so he stormed up the ramp to confront MJF. Wardlow walked out, and he stepped in between them. And that was pretty much the entire segment. So there it is. There's your tease for a Punk-Wardlow match that I said we're going to get Punk and Wardlow before we ever get Punk and MJF. The only question is, when are they going to do it? We don't have a date. There was nothing announced yet. I would think maybe winter is coming, or, you know, a big show that they would want to do Punk and Wardlow. Because you don't have to do Punk and MJF. You absolutely should not be doing Punk and MJF for a while. I mean, even that first Dynamite on TBS at the beginning of next month feels like it would be too soon. Yeah, but the next pay-per-view is the first week in March. I think they could hold off until then. I would wait. There's no need to rush into that. You've got Punk and MJ, or rather Punk and Wardlow. You could do Punk and Sean Spears if you want to. I would hold off on Punk and MJF for a while. But I do think tonight showed one thing, and this was my concern. This is my fear. My one critique about that segment, as great as it was last week, and the promo battle that we got last week, I said was one of the best television segments all year. My fear was that they blew their load in one night, and they ran through most of their like best material in one segment. Are they going to have more left? And tonight, the material was not nearly as good as last week. So hopefully they're not going to start running on fumes and going to, you know, nonsensical stuff and, you know, kind of formulaic stuff. They need more material to kind of hold them over. You can get some more promo segments between these two before you get to the eventual contract signing, right? You could do that. Britt Baker, speaking of Britt Baker, was not in CM Punk's locker room, but she was backstage with Rebel and Jamie Hayter and Tony Schiavone. And Britt complained about having to wrestle Riho. Riho beat her on Rampage last week in non-title action. She pinned Britt Baker to earn a future AEW Women's Championship match. Jamie Hayter said that she had one of the best matches in the TBS tournament, which is true. She did last week against Thunder Rosa, but Britt Baker pointed out that she lost. And Jamie Hayter pointed out that, well, you lost a big match to Thunder Rosa a long time ago. They were sniping at each other, and Rebel was trying to calm them down. And Jamie Hayter is going to take on Riho next week. Adam Cole was out next to do commentary. And when I said that this week's episode of Dynamite, I don't even know which show I'm watching anymore, was hit or miss, this is one of the reasons why. So Adam Cole comes out, big reaction. And they say Adam Cole is going to join us on commentary. But Adam Cole does not go on to over to the commentary booth. He has to go down to the ring because he's got to do his boom. You know, he's got to do the boom and he's got to do the Adam Cole baby, and the whole building does it with him, and it's great. But he goes out there for what we're never told, by the way. Right? We know he's going to do commentary, but we don't know for what match. He comes out to do commentary for a match that we're never told about. He goes down to the ring, does his boom and bebe, and then walks back up the ramp to go over to the announce booth. And a very uneasy tension between him and Tony Schiavone at the announce desk. So he sits down to do commentary for the match that, again, we still don't know what the match is. And all of a sudden, we hear Orange Cassidy's music. And Orange Cassidy comes walking out, and Excalibur points out that Orange Cassidy is not scheduled to be here. And he looks over at Adam Cole, and Adam Cole looks over at him, and Adam Cole stands up, and he confronts Orange Cassidy on the stage. So we have two guys who are not wrestling, but are out here for some reason, who are now face-to-face on the stage. While all of this is going on, out of the heel tunnel, out sneaks the Young Bucks, and they creep up behind Orange Cassidy, and Orange Cassidy, though, has it scouted. He turns around, he walks over to them, he gives them the weak, devastatingly weak kicks to the shin, and he's doing his goofy kicks. And this is the only part of this I actually love. As he's doing his goofy kicks, Adam Cole is like, fuck this. And he comes up from behind and he gives him a low blow. And all I could think is, good. Fucking guy deserved it. Acting like a jackass, what do you think is going to happen? Good for Adam Cole. So he delivers the low blow. And down to his knees goes Orange Cassidy. And now the Young Bucks are going to mock Orange Cassidy, and they deliver weak super kicks to him, and then finally they deliver regular super kicks, and they knock him down. And they're threatening now to do a triple BTE trigger. Finally, here comes Chuck Taylor and Wheeler Yuta with chairs to chase away the super click. I don't know what they must have been searching high and low for these chairs, because it took them forever to come out. But they eventually made their way out. They chased off the heels. The way this segment was set up was very dumb. It was very, very dumb. None of it made any sense other than, again, they just wanted Cole to go to the ring to pop the crowd, to do his shtick, and that was the whole point. But it was never established exactly why these guys came out here, especially Orange Cassidy, if he wasn't wrestling. This was very dumb. So Wardlow was back out. Wardlow was in action with Sean Spears in his corner. His accountability buddy was with him. It was Wardlow one-on-one against AC Adams. This went about as well as you would have expected for AC Adams. It did not last very long. This went about as long as it should have. AC Adams got about one shot in on Wardlow, who knocked him down, and then powerbombed him four times and pinned him 1-2-3. The way that Wardlow should be booked. When the match was over, Sean Spears attacked AC Adams with chair shots and destroyed the chair. I mean, the seated part of the chair came apart. I mean, he destroyed this kid with this chair. And that was that. We had a backstage segment with Penta and Pac. No Rey Fénix. Rey Fénix, they claimed, was hurt. He was unable to travel. Why does it feel like Rey Fénix is always hurt? I guess we shouldn't be surprised. If you've ever seen a Rey Fénix match, I mean, is it really all that surprising that this guy would be injured? And I assume it's a legitimate injury because they had already announced a 2 out of 3 falls tag team title match for Rampage this Friday. That match is now off. And instead of 2 out of 3 falls, instead of it being for the championship, it is non-title. It will be Pac taking Penta's place as Penta's partner. He'll be taking Rey Fénix's spot against FTR. And Pac had an eye patch over his right eye because he was sprayed in the face when Malakai Black spit mist into his eyes. Now, I always forget. Any of our Japanese wrestling fans can remind me. Fans of the great Muta. I know there are varying levels of mist. There's black mist. There's green mist. There's red mist. I mean, there might be blue, yellow mist. I know to stay away from yellow snow. I don't know about yellow mist. So remind me of which mist blinds you. Some of the mists are more devastating than others. I can never remember which color is which. I always thought yellow mist was one of the worst. But somebody will remind me. But I guess he needs an eye patch now over the eye because he's blinded in the eye. Anyway, we're going to get that match. And that's still going to be a hell of a match. I mean, Penta and Pac as a team against FTR is still going to be a pretty damn good match. But it does not look like it will be for the championships. I guess it wouldn't be if Pac is not the champion. So then we had... Okay, so people are saying it's a black mist. Well, I know Malachi's got the black mist, so I guess black is blinding. There you go. Beowulf says red is the worst mist. That's right, Asuka uses the green mist. I've got a study up on my mists. The mist, by the way. Was it the mist or the... I thought there was a movie called The Mist. Maybe I'm thinking of The Fog. I think my brain is in a fucking fog tonight. Let's go on. Father and son. Billy and Colton Gunn with Austin Gunn in their corner against father and son, Sting and Darby Allin. And Sting was out there in Darby Allin face paint looking just like his son tonight. I actually thought the face paint looked pretty badass. And they mentioned on commentary that this was Sting's first match in Atlanta in 14 years, which would have put that back during his run in TNA. So what event would that have been, is what I'm wondering. Would that have been a TNA pay-per-view? TNA taping? 14 years ago would have been, what was that, 2007, 2008, somewhere around that time? Taz sat in on commentary. He had Powerhouse Hobbs and Hook there with him. I vote for Hook, by the way, to replace Jim Ross on commentary for the rest of the month. I think Hook would make a fine addition to the announcement. At least we know he won't talk over anybody. So Darby and Colton, they started out. And then it was time for Sting and Billy Gunn. Oh boy. Sting and Billy Gunn here on Dynamite. Sting hit an atomic drop. Billy avoided a stinger splash in the corner. Darby tagged in, went for a coffin drop, but Billy caught him and planted him with a uranage. Back from break, Colton had a scorpion deathlock on Darby. They were getting the heat on Darby all throughout the break. Darby got out of it. He made the hot tag to Sting. And Sting landed stinger splashes on both guns and spinebuster on Colton. Locked on the scorpion deathlock. Referee was distracted. And while the referee was distracted, Austin Gunn came into the ring and he caught Sting in the face with a right hand. And that broke up the scorpion deathlock. So Austin Gunn then retreats back out to the floor. Sting is shaking things, you know, he's shaking off the shot to the face. Austin goes back out to the floor, and Darby Allin takes out Austin Gunn with an absolutely sickening tope suicida through the ropes, appropriately named tope suicida, because it looked like Darby was trying to commit suicide when he did this move. He nailed Austin, but in doing so, he also nailed his head into the floor. And at first I thought he was hurt because he kind of was like in a fetal position almost. And he was hurt because when he came up, he had a red streak on top of his head that wasn't there when the match started, I don't believe. I mean, he looked like Tatanka. Remember Tatanka had the red streak in his hair? Only this time it was blood. So he obviously cracked his skull open when he landed on the floor. Billy hit a famouser on Sting, but he kicked out at two. Darby took out Billy with another fantastic suicide dive. I could watch Darby doing dives all day long. It's the one guy who I actually look forward to when he launches himself like a cannon out of the ring onto these people. It looks like he is trying to murder his opponent when he hits this move. I love it. But he's going to kill himself one of these days. So he gets back in the ring, he hits the float over stunner on Colton, Sting follows with the scorpion death drop for the win, and so the Gun Club is undefeated no more. The world has not been this devastated since Lesnar broke the streak at WrestleMania. The Gun Club's unblemished record is unblemished no more. Yeah, look, it was something for Sting and Darby to do. You guys know I was not overly enthusiastic about Darby Allin going from wrestling MJF to wrestling fucking Colton Gunn and Billy Gunn on TV. It was something for Sting and Darby to do. It was a way to get Sting back in the ring for a rare television match. We don't see Sting in the ring on TV every week. The challenge, though, is to find something now, something more meaningful for Darby Allin to do. We saw him lose to MJF. MJF has moved on now. He's going to be wrestling and working with CM Punk. What do you do with Darby? What do you do with Darby Allin? Darby has already tangled with Team Taz, so that's been done. Darby has already tangled with MJF and the Pinnacle, so that's been done. Now, he wrestled the Gun Club. That's been done. I look at the different groups and the different factions on this show, and I'm thinking Superclique. Darby and Sting working a program of sorts with the Superclique, and we get to Darby and Adam Cole. And if it were me, I think that would be a direction that I would start in very soon. Darby Allin and Adam Cole was, I think, the next big match for Darby that I would start building to. Backstage, Chris Jericho did an interview talking about how he wasn't out there last week on Rampage to help Eddie Kingston. That's not why he did what he did when he left the announce booth to go help him when he was being overwhelmed by 2.0 and Daniel Garcia when his match was over. He didn't go out there to do that. He went out there to take out 2.0 and Daniel Garcia, who had, you know, talked some shit to him and interrupted his promo the week before. As he's in the middle of doing this promo, 2.0 and Daniel Garcia show up and they beat the ever-loving piss out of Chris Jericho and they hit him in the head with a chair and they left him for dead. Good. Jericho annoys me now. Jericho annoys. You know who doesn't annoy me, though? The Scribe, who just became a Sound Off superstar, Sound Off channel member. Welcome to The Scribe, and welcome to everybody else joining here for your Dynamite review tonight, the first one here in the month of December. We only have about three more after this, I guess, right? Maybe four? Before we hit the new year. It's coming up quick. Manny suggests Darby and Malakai Black. Absolutely a match I want to see. I don't know that that's the next feud, though, for Darby. I don't know that that's the next one. But Darby and Adam Cole, I'm just looking at it from the perspective of Darby seems to mix it up with a lot of groups. And, you know, I could see them doing Darby and Sting against the Bucks and them seeing that as maybe like a marquee type of match. They could do it Revolution maybe in March. So just, I think, more realistically, I can see them going there first. Darby and Malakai is a match I would build to in 2022, absolutely. I mean, that could be one of the marquee matches at Double or Nothing in Vegas, I think. So Darby has a lot of different people he could work with. I'm just looking at what's next for him. And I'm going in the direction of the Superclique and Adam Cole. But yeah, Jericho just is has been annoying me. I think what really annoyed me was last week. The stuff where he was trying to be funny and talk about Squarehead with, you know, the member of 2.0 and, you know, Matt Lee. It's not funny. You know, especially coming off the MJF and the Punk stuff, which, you know, a lot of that was clever stuff. And then to go from that to what we saw with Jericho last week really drove home, I think, how I don't want to say that things have passed Jericho by. I mean, he has his moments, but a lot of the humor we see from him on the show is very forced. It's not funny. He seems almost out of place now in this company. And I don't want to say that there's no role for him in AEW, but I think Jericho is the kind of person who would benefit from going away for a while. Just disappearing for a while, going on tour, doing something else, and then reemerging after however many months. He just seems lost. It just seems there's no real apparent role for him right now. And a lot of his material is very tired and very played out. We had Taz was still on commentary. I mentioned Taz had come out earlier for commentary. He was still on commentary, and now he's doing this spoof as he is talking about the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal next week. He's doing his best impersonation of Scott Steiner math, and he's crunching the percentages and he's crunching the numbers and trying to talk about how the winner is going to be a member of Team Taz. As he's doing this, Leo Rush interrupts, and here's yet another example of one of these segments that just did not work. The Adam Cole, Orange Cassidy, the setup to that was really stupid. This segment here did not work. It did not work. I know what they were trying to do, but it flatlined in front of this crowd. Leo Rush comes out, and he cuts a very weird promo. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, it sounded to me as if he forgot what he was supposed to say. And then eventually came back around to it. Because he was just not saying anything. To the point where even Taz at one point was like, all right, spit it out. What are you trying to say? And so finally he, you know, went into this promo about how he resents the fact that Taz said that his crew had a 100% chance of winning the Battle Royal next week. That implied that he, being Leo Rush, had 0% chance of winning the Battle Royal. Everybody knows he's a fighter. He fights. He's a fighter, he says. And Taz told him he might as well go ahead and retire. I was waiting for the final word there. Again. That was a missed opportunity for Taz. That's what I was thinking. The guy's already retired twice. He's got a few more months, I think, before we get there. Ricky Starks and Dante Martin walk out from the heel tunnel to confront. Now you know Dante Martin's a heel because he came out of the heel tunnel. So they come out and they're kind of staring down Leo Rush and laughing in his face. And that was the entire segment. This was not good. You can hear the guy in the 10th row letting out a wet fart in that building. That's how quiet it was. And that's really how this segment went over. It went over about as well as a wet fart. This crowd was so quiet for this segment. They didn't react to anything. So this was just weird. It just did not work at all. But all is forgiven. If we get Leo Rush one-on-one against Dante Martin, I would do that match of Winter is Coming in 2 weeks. I would open the damn show with it. I would open the show like it's Nitro in 1997. You put those two guys in the ring and give them the first 15 minutes of the show. That's what I would do. We had Chris Statlander one-on-one against Ruby Soho. I'm not going to sing the song like Taz does. YouTube would probably strike me if I tried to do some karaoke here. Believe it or not, they've done that to people. People who have done karaoke have been struck on YouTube because they can't. They're so good, I guess, that YouTube can't tell the difference between them playing the music and just karaokeing the music. I won't do that. But Chris Statlander against Ruby Soho in the final quarterfinal match here in the TBS title tournament. Ruby hit a top rope senton for a near fall, buzzsaw kick for a two count. Statlander hit a blue thunderbomb for a near fall. These are some of the highlights here of the match. Statlander hit a Michinoku driver, actually pretty damn good looking Michinoku driver for a near fall. Ruby came back with some strikes. Statlander blocked a corner attack, and Ruby turned it into a poison Rana, and then a spike Rana for a very close near fall. Ruby tried to land her no future finisher. Statlander avoided it, though, went for the Big Bang Theory, but Ruby reversed it into a victory roll for the win. And when the match was over, the two of them shook hands. Of course, Ruby, if you remember, we went through the whole remaining bracket last week. I said Ruby's going to go on. Ruby was my pick to win the whole thing. And still is. I still think in the end she pulls it out. But they shook hands. All of a sudden, as Statlander goes to leave, Vicky Guerrero comes out. She's on the ramp, and Chris Statlander walks up to Vicky Guerrero to confront her, and they're arguing and yelling back and forth. This distracts Chris Statlander. In the ring, Ruby Soho is celebrating. She's on the middle rope, facing the audience. Doesn't see Nyla Rose coming up behind her. Nyla Rose is her opponent in the semifinal round of the tournament. And Nyla comes in and grabs her and shoots her backwards down onto the mat. Statlander, once she notices, runs down to chase Nyla away. This match was not as good as the Thunder Rosa-Jamie Hayter match. I thought the Thunder Rosa-Jamie Hayter match last week was excellent. This match was not at that level. The second half got really good. It was weird, though, because it started out very slow. Crowd was very quiet. They went to break. They came back. And it's almost like a completely different match when they came back. It's like they kicked it into the next gear. Everybody's, you know, popping for the near falls and chanting, "This is awesome." It's almost like they went from 0 to 100 like that. And there was like a middle portion of the match that was missing. So that was kind of weird. I did enjoy the final few minutes, but not as good as what we got last week. But the right outcome. I think of the two, Ruby was the right choice to move on. And that brings us to the main event. Cody Rhodes, the beloved Cody Rhodes, who's been getting so much love from the audiences each and every week. They love this man. They love Cody. Cody was the one who solved racism, if you remember. Cody Rhodes one-on-one against Andrade El Idolo in an Atlanta street fight. Now, to be fair, Cody got more of a mixed reaction this week than he has gotten in recent weeks. Other weeks, he's been booed out of the building. I think going back really to the New York City show. This week, it was not totally one side or the other. It was more mixed. Andrade attacked Cody while Cody was making his entrance. You know who actually got the best reaction? Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson making an entrance in Atlanta was going to get a massive reaction, and he did. And as they're soaking in the cheers, Andrade attacks Cody because this is a street fight. Anything goes. So he attacks him, and this is the part I mentioned earlier where you could see in the background Arn, because Jose, you know, Andrade's manager, comes at Arn, and Arn slips and falls backwards. Now, he didn't fall far. Thank God. I mean, can you imagine if it was like a 5-foot drop? That would have been the end of Armed Anderson. No Glock is going to save you if you're however many years old he is, falling off a ramp. It kind of reminded me, actually, of Bret Hart. You remember when Bret Hart made his one and only appearance in AEW 2 years ago, and he presented the AEW championship belt. As he was leaving, he fell off the stage. And I don't think any video's ever been, leaked of it. But, you know, you read that Bret Hart fell off the fucking stage, and it's like, holy shit. Thankfully, he was okay. Arn is fine, but that was a little scary there. So Arn and Jose are now fighting, and they're fighting through the tunnel to the back. Cody and Andrade are fighting into the crowd, and Cody hits a twisting moonsault, a very crooked moonsault off the barrier somewhere in the stands down onto Andrade. And there are plunder everywhere. Garbage pail is dumped on these guys. And they end up back in the ringside area. And I'm looking at Cody's back. When they get back down to the ring, I'm looking at Cody's back. And I'm thinking, what the fuck is on this guy's back? Like, what could Andrade have dumped on him when they were in the crowd? I mean, it looked as if this guy went to a tanning bed that was made out of Elmer's glue. His back was white and scaly and peeling, and by the end of the match, I realized exactly what it was. Obviously, it was some kind of flame retardant gel that they, you know, obviously put on his back for the big finishing spot in the match. But before that, you're watching this going, what the fuck is, even Taz on commentary, what is on that guy's back? I think even he made the comment, is it glue? You know, did he bathe in glue? So Cody hits a snap power slam. Andrade low blowed him and started whipping him with his weight belt. Cody's weight belt, by the way, I think it was Andrade, tossed it into the crowd, and the audience is like, throw it back. Peer pressure on this poor bastard who caught the belt, but I don't believe the guy caved into the peer pressure. He was like, this is mine. I'm keeping this as a souvenir. You guys can all go piss off. So the belt never got thrown back. Or if it did, it didn't make it into the ring because I didn't see it land in the ring. So Andrade grabs Jose's laptop that I guess Jose had, usually brings down to the ring. Although Jose wasn't out there at that point, I don't believe. But the laptop was there. He smashes the laptop over Cody's head. And he takes a chair. A lot of shots to the head in this match. Chair shots. There was a chain shot. There was a laptop shot. There was something else he hit Cody in the head with. Actually, it was a chair, which I'll get to in a second. A lot of headshots in this match. So Andrade hit a split-legged moonsault onto Cody through a chair for a near fall. Cody fought out of a suplex, kicked Andrade low. He went for the Cody cutter, but Andrade countered it, pushed Cody. As Cody was about to come off the ropes for the springboard, Andrade just shoved him, and Cody fell out to the floor. And that led into the final commercial break of the night. Back from break, Cody tossed a chair up at Andrade. Now, at first, it did not look good. They showed a replay of it, and you can see, as Andrade comes off for a moonsault, Cody just takes the chair and throws it up at him. So that view of it looked better. But Andrade got him back when Cody, moments later, came through the ropes. Not exactly like Darby Allin does it, but he came through with a tope. And as Cody comes through the ropes with a tope, Andrade hit him in the face with the same chair. And that split Cody open. Unless he bladed, I can believe that it caught him and, you know, busted him open. But he came up bleeding. So Andrade is pulling up the mats outside the ring. I always liked that. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, I can remember, you know, watching old WWF. And guys would... Actually, they did that at WrestleMania. Hogan Andre, WrestleMania 3. You pull up the mats, you expose the concrete, try to backdrop the guy. It's such a basic kind of old school spot. And I still enjoy it when people do. You don't see people pulling up the mats as much. I can remember in many Mankind matches back in 96, where Mankind, the opponent, Shawn Michaels did this to him. And I think Undertaker did too, where he would pull up the mats and then put the mat over him. And I remember Michaels comes jumping off the ring apron down onto him with the mat over him. So you can be creative with it. Cody backdropped him, though. It backfired on Andrade, and he landed back first on the concrete. So then Cody tries to be cute. And I know people make comparisons to it, and Cody teased a pedigree a few weeks ago and thought better of it. And it was actually a great heat spot. So I thought that was cool, because it ended up being a great heat spot. This just came off to me as him just trying to be too cute for his own good. He goes under the ring, and he fishes out a sledgehammer. And the people react. And Cody thinks better of it. He puts the sledgehammer back. He goes under the ring. He pulls out a golden shovel. And now I'm just thinking, okay, this is just stupid. I didn't really find any of this overly amusing. And not because Triple H just had a fucking heart attack. I mean, that's... Some people were making parallels to that, and it's tasteless. That doesn't bother me. I just think it was just too... It was him trying to be a little too clever, I think, for his own good. So he's got the golden shovel. Jose runs down to the ring, and Jose has no shirt on. And Jose runs down to the ring with a taser. And as he hits the ring, Cody whacks him in the head with the golden shovel. And that's all well and good, but I'm just watching this going, holy shit. I didn't know Jose was so jacked. Guy looks like a wrestler. I just thought it was some guy like, you know, Penta and Phoenix have Alex, who does the promos. Alex was an announcer for them. Alex is on fucking QVC every weekend, you know, hawking HP. I think he works for Hewlett-Packard, hawking laptops on QVC. Maybe Jose was a wrestler. I don't know. But Jose's in pretty damn good shape. Maybe it'll be Jose in there with CM Punk, giving CM Punk a run for his money in a few weeks. So that's what struck me about it. So anyway, he got whacked in the head with the golden shovel. Andrade did a dive from inside the ring. He jumped up onto the top turnbuckle and over the post with a crossbody down onto Cody on the floor. Cody is bleeding from the top of the head at this point. Back inside, Andrade hits the running double knees that he does into a chair, because Cody was down in the corner with a chair in front of his face, and Andrade came in with the running knees. Then he goes outside, and he brings a table into the ring. These fucking people all night long, we want tables, we want tables. Well, Andrade gave them their table. He brings a table into the ring, props it up in the corner, and when Cody comes charging in, Andrade basically gives him a hip toss through the table. So now Andrade goes back outside and grabs another table. And this was building to the big finale. And he brings this other table into the ring. Cody grabs the other end of the table, like they're fighting over the table. They're both opening the legs of the table. They're cooperating so they could set this table up. And they end up on the top rope. And all of a sudden, this woman can't see who she is. At first, I thought it was Red Velvet. She looked like Red Velvet. Cody and Red Velvet, right? They've been partners before. It's not Red Velvet. It's a woman who has a bandana over her face. She is disguising herself for some reason. Now, why she was disguising herself, other than, I guess, the pop, there is no other reason. That's literally the only reason that Brandi Rhodes was hiding her identity was so that when she pulled the bandana down, people would pop huge. They didn't really pop all that huge. There was a little bit of a reaction, but not a huge one. And she is spraying lighter fluid on top of this table. And as I'm watching all of this happen, I'm watching this woman, you know, basically try to maim her husband. And then I see what came after that, the big spot through the table. Because now the table, she sets it on fire, and the table is just shooting up with flames, right? Flaming table. Of course, the crowd pops because the crowd's not going to sit there on their hands for a flaming table spot, so they're going nuts for the flaming table because Cody will do anything to get cheered at this point. Anything not to turn heel. Cody is trying to get into the good graces of these fans. So they're cheering as the table is set ablaze. And he hits not a suplex, but a reverse DDT. Because he had Andrade's head hooked under his arm and did the reverse DDT over. Andrade completely cleared the table. I don't even think he touched the table. Cody is the one who went through the flames, went through the table. And when he came up and went to go crawl over to cover Andrade for the win, Cody's arm, there was a spot on his arm that was still on fire. And he went to go drape his arm over Andrade. Now, I don't think Andrade was on fire. I think what happened is that one spot on Cody's arm was still on fire. And when he draped his arm over Andrade, if you watch, Andrade started like trying to put the flame out, because I think Cody put the flame on his chest. And he pins Andrade and he wins the match. This was completely unnecessary. Did it look cool? Yeah, it looked cool. It's hard for a flaming table spot to not look cool. But this was completely unnecessary. I mean, when Mick Foley and Edge did the spot at WrestleMania 22, I mean, that had been built up over a period of you know, weeks or a few months, and it became really personal between those two. This, when I saw Brandi come out and start hosing the table down in lighter fluid, and then I saw what Cody did, I thought, does this really necessitate, was this feud so personal between these two that it necessitated a flaming table spot at the end? Had they done this with Cody and Malakai Black, I could believe that, because Cody and Malakai have been feuding now for a few months, and Malakai has, for the most part, had his number. Cody and Andrade, I mean, I know that Andrade has, you know, been kind of a thorn in his side now for a few weeks, but it's like, I mean, it would be like on Raw this Monday night, Damian Priest comes out for a rematch with Apollo Crews, and there's a fucking flaming table in the match when they had one match on TV last week. I mean, this was just, you know, this was a flaming table spot for the sake of doing a flaming table spot. It just felt completely out of place to me here, but Cody wins the match. And obviously everybody popped huge, and thankfully he didn't burn his entire body. It was scary when I saw the flame. I didn't know how much of him was still on fire. And look, anytime you're dealing with fire, and you can put all the gel on your body and wet your hair and do all the little tricks to try to make sure you don't get burned, you're taking a risk. It's very dangerous. So when you do a spot like that, you want to save it for an occasion where it really matters. That was my issue with them doing it here in this match. It was just, you know, let's do a flaming table spot. No, Brandi is back. And, you know, for whatever reason, she's out there looking like Diamante with the fucking bandana covering her face. Very weird. But at least for one night, Cody was not completely booed out of the building in Atlanta. He was only partially booed. But shout out to Andrade. Even though he cleared the table and Cody took the brunt of the flames, Andrade took a lot of abuse in that match as well. It actually looked like he may have hurt himself on that split-legged moonsault. I was a little worried about him there because he came up lame, and the referee went over to check on him. It was almost like maybe he, you know, did something maybe he had a groin injury or something with his leg, but he seemed to be okay. Shout out to both guys. They both took a beating, Cody included in that match, but also Andrade, who beat the crap out of this guy. Rampage this Friday has FTR against Pac and Penta. Again, that is non-title. Sammy Guevara defends the TNT Championship against Tony Nese. Jade Cargill will be in action against one of Thunder Rosa's students. Thunder Rosa will be filling in for Chris Jericho. God. On commentary, Thunder Rosa will be doing commentary with Excalibur and I presume Taz usually. Is Taz usually there on Rampage? Ricky Stark sometimes is there. Dynamite next Wednesday is AEW's debut with the UBS Arena in Long Island. That is where WWE could barely fill half the building this past Monday. AEW has sold thousands of more tickets to that show coming up on Wednesday next week. But apparently there are people in WWE who believe that Tony Khan has been buying up tickets to his own show to try to inflate the attendance numbers. So this is how bad things have gotten with WWE. Instead of trying to come to the realization and the understanding that it's hard for them to sell tickets in a lot of these venues because their product is fucking boring, Monday Night Raw is a fucking slog to sit through, maybe people in New York don't want to go to Raw and sit there for 3 hours and be bored to fucking tears. No, 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 no. It can't be that. No, 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 it can't be. It's got to be Tony Khan buying up tickets to his own show. Now they're concocting conspiracy theories to try to explain their own shitty creative away. Tony Khan is not buying up tickets to his own show. I can't prove that he isn't, but I can't prove that he is. I'm going to say he's not. I'm going to say that those people are a little paranoid. A lot of paranoia going on right now in WWE. It's embarrassing, though. I mean, they have every reason to be embarrassed. New York was always their home market. AEW came in and put 20,000 people, almost 20,000 people, at Arthur Ashe Stadium in September. I think that got them spooked. Now this brand new, beautiful building in Long Island, and I wasn't there on Monday. Yeah, no, I wasn't there on Monday, but I heard from people who have been to Islanders games, and that's bad enough, going to an Islanders game, but they said that it's a really nice building and there's a nice beer garden in there and they got some nice bars. So they go to this beautiful new building and they have to section half of it off because they couldn't move enough tickets. They had to do 2-for-1 deals. They had discounted tickets. I was seeing ads locally for it. Roman Reigns. They added Roman Reigns to the show. He did a dark match when the show was over. They had to put Roman Reigns on the show to try to sell more tickets and even that didn't work. I think they had barely 5,000 people in the building on Monday, or maybe a little over 5. I believe AEW has at least 8,500 or 9,000. They might have 10,000 by the time we get to next week. In their home market, in WWE's home market of New York. So they have every right to be embarrassed by that. But instead of passing the buck on to someone else and blaming someone else and coming up with some ridiculous conspiracy theory about why they outsold WWE, maybe they should look in the mirror to see exactly what the problem is. I got a golden egg I can sell you if you're not sure still of what the problem is. Real cheap. It's gold-plated. It's not even real gold. Anyway, on Dynamite next Wednesday, Bryan Danielson one-on-one against John Silver. Jamie Hayter takes on Riho and the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal, which I will predict MJF will not be winning. MJF has had great success with the Dynamite Diamond Ring stuff 2 years in a row. There will not be a third year in a row for MJF. Who will win, I can't tell you, because I don't know who's in it. They didn't announce who's in the Battle Royal yet, but it will not be MJF. Let's check the Twitter poll. See where we're at. 82% thumbs up, 17.7%. percent thumbs down. At Solomonster, by the way, is the place to go if you would like to vote for any of these polls. And if you are joining late, if you are a Sound Off channel member, do not forget, brand new RSPW Rewind. These are rare. So I know it's some people's favorite segment. Brand new one is up now. Why did RSPW hate The Rock so much? Some very interesting threads that I uncovered from 20 years ago. 21 years ago, actually. That, among other posts, it is exclusively available right now to our channel members here on YouTube. Exclusive to them until Friday. On Friday, everybody else gets it. But right now, if you are a channel member, you have access to RSPW Rewind. So jump on that, check it out, leave some feedback, let me know what else you want me to search for. I'm running out of posts. So let me know what topics you might want to hear about, and I can search for it and see if I can find any posts related to those topics. I shall do my best. As I always do for you guys, right? I shall do my best. By the way, I have to say thank you to everybody who tweeted me. I guess today, being December 1st, if you listen to the podcast on Spotify, they do this thing called Spotify Wrapped, and it will tell you which podcasts you've been listening to the most for the year 2021 and how many minutes, how many episodes. And a lot of you tweeted me your, I guess, Spotify summaries. And for a lot of you, the Sound Off was number one, your number one podcast of the year, number one over Joe Rogan in some cases, number one over Conrad and his 7,400 podcasts, and some of the other heavy hitters in the online community here. So I thank you. I mean, there were people who have listened to 17,000 minutes. I think that was the top one so far. I saw one person tweet me. He had listened to 17,688 minutes of me rambling on about wrestling all year long. That is dedication right there. And that is why I love the fuck out of you guys. So tweet me and let me know where I fall in your Spotify Wrapped. I've been enjoying all the updates. Unless I came in at number two. One of you tweeted me and Chris Van Vliet had me beat out. He was number one, I was number two. That ain't gonna fly with me. That ain't gonna fly with me. That don't sit well with me. Me and Chris are gonna have an issue. Me and Chris are gonna have to go one-on-one if I see any more of that. That is completely unacceptable. Well, let's read your super chats. Again, I will go through these here. If you have questions about tonight's show, WWE, AEW, let me know. And we'll hang out here for a while and see what you guys have to say about things. And I thank everybody in advance who does donate via super chat. It's one of the easiest ways to support outside of becoming a channel member. Here on YouTube, a direct way to support me and the channel and what I do, and I do thank you for that. Joshua Carlos Ocean Man dropped a couple of super chats here, more than one. Thank you, Joshua. This Brian versus Hangman feud has been great so far. Also, buy or sell on the better triple threat match, Austin Triple H Mankind from SummerSlam 99. Or take a Rock Angle Vengeance 2002. Oh, the Vengeance one by far. The Vengeance match is one of my favorite triple threats that they've ever done. Might have been surpassed by the Royal Rumble 2015 one with Cena, Lesnar, Rollins, but that's much. I mean, the SummerSlam 99 one I didn't think was anything special. And he says, can you name your favorite wrestlers on the microphone? I mean, if we're talking all time, I mean, Piper's definitely on that list. Punk. Piper and Punk are definitely both on that list. The Rock. I mean, how could The Rock not be on the list? Even Jericho. Jericho now is just, it seems like in a lot of these segments, he's a shell of what he used to be. But Jericho used to be great. Very entertaining on the mic. Especially when he would insult Stephanie McMahon. I always got a kick out of that. And underrated wrestlers on the mic. Oh, I don't know about underrated. Underrated wrestlers on the microphone? I mean, there have probably been a lot of them. I don't know that any one name really stands out to me. If we're talking about people who don't get enough credit for being good on the microphone, I mean, there's been a lot of good people on the microphone. I don't know if there's any one that stands out. It's kind of the great ones that stand out the most to me. The ones that are head and shoulders above the rest. Oh, Jolly Burgos, thank you for the five. What are your thoughts on Scherzer and the Mets offseason? And am I doing a prediction stream for NXT? Probably not doing a prediction stream. I will do predictions on the podcast on Sunday. So if you listen to the podcast before the pay-per-view on Sunday, you'll get my thoughts on the War Games show. I will be going live after War Games, just so you know. Even though I don't do any live NXT TV show reviews, usually I save it for the Sunday show. I will be live on YouTube after War Games on Sunday. So just a little programming note there. Scherzer, here's my quick thoughts on that. This was, I think, a good week to be a Mets fan. I know Scherzer is not a young man, but he is one of the best arms in all of baseball. And the Mets now have a 1-2 punch in DeGrom and Scherzer. I want to win now. We want to win the World Series next year. That is, of course, if there's no lockout. I know there was talk about that, but I'm excited for what's to come. I look at it as a positive signing. We're trying to win now. You never know when it comes to pitching and arms, and all it takes is one injury to fuck up an entire season, but I am optimistic. Groovy Goose, what do you think of the top five wrestling moments and matches to occur in Atlanta? I mean, there have been a lot of classic wrestling moments in Atlanta. You go back in the NWA days at the old Omni with, moments with Dusty and the Horsemen and Tully and Magnum and not just matches, but moments as well. I don't know what the number one all-time one would be, but probably any combination of those. A lot of classic shit. You know, Luger, you know, back when he was probably the TV champion or something, or U.S. champion at the time. A lot of classic moments at the Omni, but I also think of the Georgia Dome, and I think of Goldberg and Hogan. And say what you want to about Goldberg and, you know, should they have done that match on Nitro and not pay-per-view? Of course not. But that is one of the all-time classic wrestling matches in Atlanta. You know, Goldberg going over Hogan in the Georgia Dome, and everybody losing their minds as Goldberg took the belt back for WCW from the kingpin of the NWO is one of the all-time great moments. Oh, Ace in the chat says, lockout has officially happened. Well, I guess we have a lockout. Well, that sucks. Yeah, I've been out of the baseball loop today. I was doing some work earlier, so I did not know what the latest update was, but apparently we have a lockout, so. Well, so much for my excitement, I guess, right? We'll see how that turns out. Food Hive says he enjoyed Cody against Andrade. 5 stars. No, it was definitely not 5 stars. Quintus Brown, good show tonight. That flaming table spot was so unnecessary, overbooked. Food Hive says, I have not heard a valid reason for the Cody hate yet. Yeah, you know, again, there we've talked about the Cody hate and the reasons for it, and I think part of it is him coming and going so often when he would leave to go do reality TV stuff and then come back and then leave and come back. And I think part of it also is just people look at him and they go, man, this guy thinks he's a bigger deal than he really is. And they resent him for it. I don't get a lot of the Cody hate either. But if he continues to do stuff like the golden shovel and the sledgehammer, I mean, it's cute every now and then, but tonight was just overkill on that. And that's the kind of stuff I think that could turn people off. But I think some people just don't like Cody and Brandy. It's not just Cody, it's Brandy too. They get a lot of hate. They got a lot of hate for the reality show, the whole Rose to the Top thing. I think people just look at that and they go, we don't like these people. They think they're bigger celebrities than they are, and we're going to boo them. I think that has a lot to do with it. JD Starlord, Cody felt the love tonight. The burning love. Hey, Demi, what's going on? $2 Super Chat. Another Fuego episode. Love you, Solo. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. The Phenom dropping $8. How would you feel about turning Cody heel by having him go by his real name, Runnels, and having him disgrace the Rhodes name and his father's legacy by saying that he has been held back by the Rhodes name? That will never happen. I don't think that's a good way to go. But Cody will... I cannot imagine Cody ever going for that. You know, his name means something to him. That is something that even in kayfabe, I just can't see him wanting to do that. I can't see him agreeing to do that. And it actually looks like he doesn't want to go heel at all. Again, I think a big part of why we saw what we did tonight is he's trying to win himself back into the good graces of the fans by going above and beyond. So they'll turn around and be like, oh, wow, this guy's really putting himself on the line for us. Oh, we should embrace him. We should start cheering for him. I don't know that it's going to work. He could show up on TV next week and be booed out of the building in Long Island. It's Long Island, so you never really know what you're going to get. You could get a completely dead crowd like they had on Monday. I tend to think the crowd was so dead on Monday because the show was not that exciting. But having been to the Nassau Coliseum many times over the years, I can tell you that the Long Island audience is not exactly the most exciting audience in the world. So, I don't know what the reaction is going to be there for AEW next week. I think they'll be loud. If I had to take a bet, I would say Long Island will be much louder for Dynamite next week than they were for Raw this week. Hey, Steven, what's going on? Can we all pitch in and get Arn a life alert? He may need one after tonight. S. Haney in the chat just got out of the show in Atlanta, said that... Oh, actually, it was Duluth, technically, right? Duluth is like a suburb of Atlanta. But S. Haney says, had a good time. So he must have just gotten out of the building, I guess. Rampage just ended. Andre Israel with the $10 Super Chat. Time for me to get in on the Super Chat fun. So here is my first to you. Cody's favorite song is definitely Burn by Usher. Confirmed. Fire Panda with the $5 Super Chat is celebrating a birthday tomorrow and is very happy to be spending it with all of us. So happy birthday to Fire Panda. I am happy that you are spending part of your birthday eve with us, and I hope you have a kick-ass day tomorrow. I hope you have a better day than Cody will. He might be getting a skin graft in the morning at the hospital. Vitamin Vision, a little over the top, but I enjoyed the show. Groovy Goose with the $1.99. I predict that MJF beats CM Punk. He needs a win. That's exactly what I have... predicted, and I have said that MJF should be the first person to hand CM Punk a loss in AEW. When they eventually meet, whatever that may be, and again, I don't know how long they're going to be willing to hold off on that match. When they get to that point, MJF should beat CM Punk. I agree. Because MJF is going to go on from there, should go on from there, to challenge for the AEW championship. And to do that, he needs a big win over CM Punk. He can't lose to CM Punk and then go on to challenge for the championship. And Fire Panda also wants to send love to Jim Ross. I think many of us send best wishes to JR as he continues his radiation treatment. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned it, Angry Magma. Did you just become a channel member earlier? I think you did, and I didn't mention it. If you did, I just wanted to acknowledge that and say thank you. I saw something pop up, but I wasn't sure if it was for you. But thank you, Angry Magma. Shaquan Hickman. I know Shaquan is a new channel member. He joined earlier tonight, dropping $9.99. Winter is coming. Right decision to have Hangman against Danielson, AEW world title match on that show. I think they will go to a 60-minute time limit draw, which is exactly what I said, which will further Danielson's heel turn. Do they have the guts to do it? That's the question. Do they have the guts to put on a 60-minute match? on their live show. Tuxedo T. Servo with the $5 super chat. Interested in your thoughts on WWE using firings to further stories. To me, it seems like Vince is seeing just how low he can set the bar. Yeah, I'm going to talk more about that when I talk about Raw on the podcast on Sunday. I was not a fan of that at all on Monday. And this is not the first time WWE has taken a real-life situation and tried to kind of transpose it onto someone else. They did that with Baron Corbin the very night that all the McMahons stood in the ring back in 2018 and said, you know, they apologized to all of their viewers basically for their shitty television, their shitty creative. That's what they did. They acknowledge that we've got problems and we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. We're going to give the people what they want. Remember that? That promise they made to us? Of course, they had their fingers like this, crossed behind their back when they said it. But in the very next segment, Baron Corbin came out and they blamed the low ratings on Baron Corbin. They blamed the low ratings on Baron Corbin as if it's all his fault. This was worse, though, because of what they did. And they're using it to try to get heat in an angle on TV. I was not a fan of it at all. I thought it was pretty fucking low for them to be doing that. I'll talk more about that on Sunday. I got more to say about it. Naif Al-Safar. Dropping $9.99. Thank you, Naif. Yeah, Austin in the chat. That's right. He reminds me that... there was a point where Paige and Charlotte, that's right, Paige, remember when Paige had to use a line about Charlotte's brother after he passed away? Because her brother Reed died of a drug overdose. And there was a line, and you could tell Paige did not want to deliver the line. She felt completely uncomfortable delivering it. It was completely unnecessary. I mean, there's it's fine to draw real heat with certain things, but then there's certain lines you don't cross. And there have been many times where WWE has stepped over that line and it didn't really even add anything to what they were doing. It's just them being trying to be edgy and they end up just looking like, you know, a bunch of heartless bastards, basically. And that was, I remember that. You know, even the Eddie's in Hell thing with Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton. And they argued all day long against that. And Vince insisted, nope, you got to go out there and say it. He's a weird guy. Magician Sapphire, thank you for the 10 spot. I'm hyped for Orange Cassidy against Adam Cole, especially since it means Orange Cassidy will not deal with the Hardy family office. Well, you found one of the silver linings in him moving on to feud with somebody else. Fire Panda with the $5. Question for you in the chat. It was Sting last winter is coming. Who do you think is going to show up for the next winter is coming? Well, Wyndham Rotunda is a free agent. He is supposedly filming a movie right now, but he is a free agent. We have two people who WWE are very much trying to re-sign, who have not yet re-signed, I don't believe, but they want to keep Johnny Gargano and they want to keep Kyle O'Reilly. And they may well stay. I mean, I could see Johnny staying in WWE, especially because his wife is still employed there. If Kyle O'Reilly sticks around, I don't even know what to say to that. If Kyle O'Reilly stays in that company and re-signs for another 3-5 years, whatever it is, then... I mean, that's it for him. I don't see him doing a damn thing in that company. So if he becomes a free agent, I don't know exactly which day this month his contract is up, but it is up this month. You know, I've been rooting for a Red Dragon reunion in AEW. Could be on that show. But a lot of that depends on his contract end date, and then, of course, he'd have to work out a deal with AEW, and there just may not be enough time, so I don't know. Beyond the obvious names like Gargano or O'Reilly or Bray, I don't know what other big free agent that they could sort of debut on that show. I don't even know if they have to be honest with you. You know, especially everything is going to be built around Hangman and Danielson. I almost wouldn't want anything to overshadow them. Rodimus Prime, $35 super chat. Hey, Rodimus, cheers to you, my friend. You have the record so far tonight as far as the super chats go. Buy, sell, or rent on which promoter you thought was at their peak? On which promoter you thought was at their peak? Jim Crockett, Vern Gagne, or Vince McMahon? I'm not sure what you mean. Who was the best at their peak or the most successful? I mean, they all had peaks. Crockett had a peak, and Vern had a peak, and Vince had a peak, and then eventually you fall from that peak. Who had the bigger peak? It was Vince. As far as who was the most successful and who made the most money, I mean, Vince McMahon is the only one of those three who's still in business. One of them's not even alive. They all had success, but no one had more success than Vince McMahon. Say what you want to about Vince today in 2021, but the most successful wrestling promoter in the history of the business is Vince McMahon. I mean, bar none. But I don't know exactly what you mean as far as at their peak. I mean, I grew up a WWF fan, so me, I would probably buy on Vince. I would rent on Crockett and sell on Vern because I didn't really watch the AWA. I wasn't in the Twin Cities. I wasn't watching the AWA here in New York. I was too young to be tape trading for it. So that would be how I would rank them. Hey, Fire Panda, look at this. Fire Panda just dropped $69.99 Canadian. Says, if they do debut someone, I would be happy with Cross and Scarlett showing up. Well, it won't be Cross and Scarlett because they had main... or at least, I shouldn't say Scarlett. It won't be Cross. He had a main roster deal. So he is not free until the beginning of February. I believe February 2nd. He's been posting stuff on his social media. So beginning of February, he will be free and clear. But not in time for winter is coming. Quintus Brown says, Wyndham is coming. I see Wyndham costing Brian the title to get revenge for Brian beating the Dark Order, Brody's boys, every week. What do you think? Yeah, I think that's a reach. Plus, that would turn Brian babyface. I'm not ready for babyface Danielson yet. He needs to stay heel for a little while longer. We're definitely going to get more than one. I believe we're going to get more than one match between these two. So if that's the case, then that idea doesn't really work. Marcus the Entertainer. I definitely see some Adam Bomb in Wardlow. Well, do you mean that as a compliment? Or, I don't know. Adam Bomb was a big dude. Wardlow's a big dude. Adam Bomb, though, I think the potential for Wardlow is much higher than it was for Adam Bomb. His ceiling is way, way high. When he splits away from MJF as a babyface, his ceiling, I mean, the sky's the limit, I think, for Wardlow. Joseph Brooks, dropping a couple of super chats here. $4.99, $1.99. Thank you, Joseph. Solomonster, did you watch the Ruthless Aggression 2.0 documentary? In the first episode, they cover Hollywood Rock. I have not watched it yet. It is on my list of things to watch. I did watch the Broken Skull Sessions with Jeff Hardy. It was good. Not one of the better ones. Not one of the more interesting ones they've done, but I thought it was good. But no, I have not watched that yet. And he says, buy or sell corporate rock or Hollywood rock? I enjoyed them both. I enjoyed the corporate champion. I enjoyed Hollywood rock. I got to go with Hollywood rock. Hollywood rock, the greatest tragedy of Hollywood rock is that he wasn't around long enough. We only got maybe 3 months of Hollywood rock. That was not nearly enough time. Hey, first timer, dropping some Armed Anderson. There you go. Got my hands up. Dropping $2. Should Darby be Sting's final match before retirement? I think that is a possibility. I don't know how long Sting wants to go on for. You know, at the rate that he wrestles, he could probably have a few more good years left in him. I think when he gets to the point where he feels like he's done, Darby may be the one that makes the most sense. him putting over Darby in his final match. Fire Panda. Solo Monster. Thoughts on Nia Jax saying that she may never wrestle again. Loki Agatho with the $10 super chat. Longtime listener. Love the podcast and the streams. All the people on the audio now are going to be like, well, what's the answer? What did he say? We can't see the faces that he makes on video. That's why you got to go back and you got to watch the video streams on YouTube after you download the audio. Loki says, you are one of the main reasons I got back into wrestling 8 years ago. It has or is helping me through serious bouts of depression. Keep doing what you do. Well, Loki, I appreciate that. If the podcast can be of help to you in any way, that makes me feel very happy. I hear that from a lot of people, actually, who are going through a lot of shit in their lives, and just listening to the podcast, it de-stresses them, or it takes their mind off things. Whatever it does, however it helps, I don't even care. As long as it helps, then I think that's fantastic. Michael Cuomo was watching King of the Ring 97 during the finals. Jim Ross asked Vince McMahon if WWE was for sale and if Triple H was going to buy the company. Man, JR was on. He was on to something back then. He was. I mean, a lot of us thought that Triple H would follow in the footsteps, and now it doesn't look that way at all. Looks like they're erasing his legacy bit by bit. Juan Sanchez dropped $19.99 on the stream, as Prince used to sing in the song. The party like it's 1999. Wanted to know what your thoughts on the Ghislaine Maxwell trials. What has been happening recently? I think this is something to look. We have to stop the elite, and I agree. We have to stop these elites. I'm not going to get into that though. I have not been following the trial closely. She seems like a monster. A monster belongs in a cage. Well, except the Solo Monster, but monsters belong in cages, and that is where that woman belongs. So may she rot away for the rest of her life. That's my thoughts on Ghislaine, or Ghislaine, or however the fuck you say her name. I don't care. She's a witch, and that is where she belongs. Fire Panda, how long before Darby turns on Sting? Darby's not turning on Sting. You can't have Darby turn on Sting. The Darby and the Sting pairing is perfect. And I actually like the idea that was just pitched a few minutes ago, where when Sting is ready to kind of hang it up, I think he might be putting over Darby in his final match. I mean, what other opponent would really make any sense for him? Joshua Carlos, who goes over in the potential Darby or Cole feud? Depends when they do it. I don't know if they're jumping into it right away. If they jump into it in the next couple of months, well, that's a good question. Because Cole has been unbeaten in singles matches so far. But Darby just came off a loss to MJF, although I guess he won the Gun Club feud. If it's me, I think Cole goes over. I think Cole goes over in that. And do you think Jericho going heel would help? Not really. I think Jericho needs to go away for a while. And I think when Jericho comes back, you know, he could go either way, heel or babyface. I think I might have him go away, come back in a heel role at that point. The Inner Circle isn't really much of a group anymore. Sammy could do his own thing. Santana and Ortiz, I don't know what is up with them. I really don't. Why are we not seeing them on TV? It's not an injury issue. You know, Sammy is defending the TNT title. We need to see Santana and Ortiz back on TV soon. So the Inner Circle is, for all intents and purposes, it's pretty much over and done with. But Jericho just doesn't really fit at the moment. Jericho's role was perfect when he first came in. He was the perfect first champion for this company. He really was. That was the right role for it. And now, they've brought in so many new names, and they have so many different programs and things going on that, again, he just feels out of place, and I think he would benefit from a little time off. Big Armada 1988. There's been a lot of Scott Steiner math references mentioned in wrestling recently. But they still won't mention the Steiner name on NXT. Like this music. Fire Panda. Jericho should have a backstage role and work with the other veterans helping the younger guys. Probably a good role for him to be in. They have Paul White, Mark Henry doing similar types of stuff behind the scenes. Dry chicken without flavor. Duluth, Georgia. The Gas South Arena should be on the AEW banned list of travels. Why? Were you at the show tonight? Was there some kind of issue with the building I'm not aware of? Is that the name of the building, by the way? The Gas South Arena? I guess that's not nearly as bad as some of the other arena names that I've heard. I'm looking at you, Guaranteed Rate Field in Chicago. Hey, Hash, what's going on? Hashway in the chat. Nice haircut. I almost cut all of it off. So, I was going for something a little bit different. I don't think he quite understood what I was going for. I was going for what they call an undercut, and that's not what he gave me. We'll try that next time. I've never had an undercut before. I wonder if I could pull it off. We'll try it and see. I'm trying something new here. The next time I go to the barbershop. Food Hive. Cooking meth punk popped me. Don't say that too fast. That was a good line. That's what I mean, though. MJF has, for the most part, fresh material. Jericho, when I hear him, it's like he's trying to do the same thing, and it just comes off as lame. Talking about square heads and SpongeBob and all kinds of nonsense. Vitamin Vision TV, can you pinpoint some reasons why you think the fans have turned on Cody? Yeah, we did. We just talked about this earlier. Everything I said earlier, I think it's a combination of him coming across almost like he's trying to be the Triple H of AEW. And I think some of the fans resent him and Brandy for positioning themselves as like the king and queen of AEW. And you get a little too big for your britches in the eyes of the fans, they turn against you. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Because Cody's had a lot of really good matches in AEW. It's not like his matches stink or anything like that. So, don't go bald, Solid Monster. It's not really up to me. I've been fortunate so far. I don't want to go bald, but it happens to all of us. I'm gonna play around with it while I still have it. You know what I mean? Try some new things. But he took it very short this time. It's gonna take about 6 weeks for it to grow back. The good news is my hair, within a week or two, my hair just kind of grows back to where it was before, so. It's when my hair stops growing, that's when I get concerned. That's when you'll start seeing me, I'll wear like a bag over my head here on the show. I'll cut little eye slots out. I'm very vain, so I'll have to cut little eye sockets out in the bag. Hey, look at that. Always a good time to see Disco Dipshit take a chair to the back. Marcus Metcalf, I walked away a bigger fan of Chris Statlander tonight. She is much more confident now than earlier in her AEW run. She is agile and a fantastic seller. Chris Statlander has improved a great deal from where she was even a couple of years ago. She's gotten a lot better. And it's one of the reasons I was looking forward to the match tonight. I thought it would be a very good match. It turned into a good match at the end. It was not a great match. But she has improved quite a bit from where she was even just a couple of years ago. I should have a hair versus hair match at House of Glory. Why would I do that? Because you know I'm losing that match. I'm going to be putting somebody over. Bald would not be a good look for me. Dry chicken without flavor. I'm surprised Andrade did not use his blade. Juan in the chat says we need the fro like we did during the early days of the pandemic. I got to tell you, man, I do not miss those days at all. I don't miss those days. I go back and I watch some of those streams from like May and June of last year. I had gone like 15 weeks or something without a haircut. I couldn't stand it. It's just like, I couldn't do anything with it. And I don't have straight hair. If I had straight hair, that'd be one thing. But it's like, yeah, I don't ever want to go back to that. If that ever happens again, I'll shave my own head. Food Hive, though, says stuff on Cody's back was bird crap and tree sap. That's as good of an explanation as any, I guess. But he popped, he says, for the golden shovel. Hey, Ghostros 123 dropping $5 super chat. There it is. $5 right there. $5. King Kong Bundy. Remember that? $5. When Jeff Hardy retires, what do you think people will remember him more for? Him jumping off a ladder or winning the WWE title? Oh, they'll remember him for the TLC matches. He held the WWE title once for a month. That will not be high up on the list of what they remember him for. They'll remember him for the TLC matches. They'll remember him for all of his screw-ups. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a nice comeback story where he'll continue to stay on the straight and narrow and he's got his life together and all that. But they'll remember him for a lot of things before they remember him for winning the WWE title. Ufman Entertainment with the $5 super chat. Unfortunately, the lockout is happening. Wonder who will star in WWE's We Never Take an Off-Season commercial. Probably The Miz. He is Mr. WWE after all. Griga, thank you for the $1.99, sir. Yeah, Oni Loco says Victory Road 2011. I mean, again, it's you take the good with the bad. That's not something that you can forget about. What happened to Victory Road? And he talked about that, actually, on the Broken Skull Sessions. They talked about Victory Road, the match with Sting. So people are going to remember him for all of that stuff. Hey, Giovanni Zarate. May have already been a channel member. Maybe he upgraded. But if he did become a channel member today, Giovanni, welcome. I think he already was. Dry chicken without flavor. Actually, before we... I missed Biblical Adrian here. My God, I missed the Biblical one. How lame and lazy can WWE pay-per-view names get with shit like Day One and bring back New Year's Resolution? What do you think is the last good pay-per-view name? I miss... Backlash was always a cool name. Fully Loaded. I like Fully Loaded. Yeah, Armageddon was cool. Very apocalyptic, many of these names. You know, the Day One thing, I'm assuming the Day One has to do with the Usos and the Bloodline. And they're just tying it into New Year's Day because the pay-per-view is airing on New Year's Day. So, it is kind of a lazy name, but I assume it has to do with the Usos. The whole Day One-ish thing that they do. Put their finger up in the air. Dry chicken, should Cody Rhodes make a GCW appearance? He might be on his way to doing that. If he's trying to win the fans over, he's going to be in GCW taking a goddamn staple gun to the ball soon. That's what's going to end up happening. We're going to see him in GCW wrestling Nick Gage. Drew Johnson says, Salamaster, you are the man. Drew, thank you, sir, dropping the $5 super chat. And Fire Panda 007. That was the super chat from earlier. That was that $69.99 Canadian. I guess it's $56.17 US. See, they do the conversion for me. Fire Panda, again, thank you. First timer. Holy shit! Look at what this, look what just popped up on our screen here. Solomania running wild, brother. Giovanni Zarate dropping $120 super chat bomb here on the Dynamite stream. That deserves some confetti. I gotta give him the confetti treatment. Dropping a $120 bomb on me here. And I missed what he said. I was so absorbed in the shock and awe of it that I didn't actually, I don't think he had a message. I think he was just dropping 120. Look at that. No message, just dropping some love. How about that? Giovanni, thank you. Not only becoming a channel member, but dropping 120 bucks here on the stream. That is fucking unbelievable. That's how you end it. We're not done yet, but that's how you end a stream. That's how you climax right there. I have reached peak climax here on this stream. Now I need a cigarette. I don't even smoke. Damn. First timer. Should Darby be Sting's? I read his earlier. You know, I was looking at the wrong window. I thought that we have more super chats here. Man, we have even more than I thought. We have even more than I thought here. I'm digging this music, by the way. If you want me to change it, let me know. But I'm fine to keep that going for the remainder of these super chats here. First timer, I think I answered that one earlier, right? When it popped up on screen. I think Darby against Sting would be a good final match for Sting. Fire Panda, what would it take for you to throw in the towel on Raw and stop watching? I watch Monday Night Raw every week because I have a podcast to do. And the podcast has grown. The podcast has gotten a lot bigger over the years. Jay William in the chat, yes, I am doing another New Year's Eve stream. New Year's Eve this year is on a Friday, so we'll probably be talking about Rampage, maybe SmackDown, but it's more of a party, kind of hanging out with you guys, doing super chats, ringing in the New Year, so... We're gonna be live on New Year's Eve, so if you guys have no New Year's Eve plans, plan to be with me. So I'll be live on YouTube like I was last year. But back to Fire Panda's question... I'm at the point now with Monday Night Raw, not really the other shows, but mainly with Raw. If it wasn't for the sound off, I would not be watching Raw anymore. And it's kind of sad for me to say that because when I got that question on the podcast about 5 or 6 years ago, my answer was I watch out of habit and hope. I've been watching it for so long that I watch it out of habit, and I watch because I hope that it's going to get better. And here we are all these years later. Not only has it not gotten better, it's actually gotten worse. And I'm at the point now where I get so many emails from people like, you're my eyes and ears when it comes to Raw. You know, I don't watch it. I let you watch it. You watch it so that we don't have to. It's true. A lot of people, more and more people are turning off Monday Night Raw. And just watching and listening to podcasts like this one. So I'm at the point now where I do it because I have a show to do. And this show has turned into a way that I support myself. You know, it's a job, but I also love it. I do love it. I may not love Raw, but I love doing the show and I love giving my opinions and interacting with you guys. But whatever hope I had for Raw has died. There is no more hope. There is no hope. I hate to be bleak. But there is no hope for Monday Night Raw. You will have those weeks where Raw is better, and then it just goes right back to being a pile of shit. So, my hope for Raw died a long time ago, and I watch it because I have a show to do. Yeah? And whether you like it or not, Raw is still the most watched show, and the show that most people want to hear about. Whether they want to hear me tear it to shreds, or they want to hear about okay, what's the good stuff that happened? I'll go on YouTube and I'll watch what Solomonster tells me I should go watch. Everybody has their reasons. Everybody has their thoughts and opinions on it. But, you know, it's at the point where I watch it because I have to. I have a show to do. I can't not watch Raw and then go and talk about Day One and talk about the Royal Rumble and talk about the pay-per-views, because you can't do that. You know, Raw and SmackDown are building to these pay-per-views. I need to be up on what's going on. I need to see the matches. I need to know what the key storylines are and, you know, the promos and everything that happens on the weekly shows. You got to stick with it. You can't do one and not the other. If I'm going to review the pay-per-views, I have to watch Raw. But it's harder and harder to sit through that show every single week. But I do it because I have a job to do. And I love my job. I just wish that the actual show I was reviewing was more entertaining. I guess that's too much to ask for. Quintus Brown, your thoughts on Big Swole leaving AEW? I did see that. She made a statement. She said she came to an agreement with Tony Khan that it was time to leave. And if you kind of read what she said, came across like she just wasn't happy sitting on the sidelines. And so I can totally understand her feeling that way. And you're going to see more people in AEW that are going to bail because they're not happy. They're not getting enough TV time. They're not being featured. You know, it's a very big roster that they have. So she feels that she needs to leave and go work somewhere else. And I can kind of understand why, but you know, they've brought in other women to try to really beef up and improve that women's division. Big Swole was not at the top of the women's division. She's not sort of the best of what they have. So she wasn't really being featured all that much. If she feels she can go somewhere else, and again, I'm assuming based on what she wrote, there was a line in the statement that she wrote that led me to believe that it had more to do with her feeling like she's not really being utilized. I know she's had issues with Crohn's disease. If it's more of a medical thing, then that's a totally different issue, but I don't think she mentioned anything in that statement about it being a medical issue. So if it's a medical thing, then absolutely she needs to look after herself. It could be that the medical issue is what really derailed her run, as Tuxedo mentioned in the chat. Her having the issues with Crohn's disease, maybe that took her out of the mix and that took her off television. If that's the case, then she needs to take care of number one. It's like Jim Ross. You know, feeling like he's got to be on Dynamite every week, and then finally he came to his senses and said, okay, I'm going to take a few weeks off. It's like, dude, you're having radiation treatment for cancer, 22 radiation treatments. I've not had radiation treatment, but my mother did when she was sick, and I know all about it, and it takes a lot out of you. You need to look after yourself. If you don't have your health, you don't have shit. So go get well, look after yourself, and you could always come back. Fire Panda, Solomonster against Brian Zane, wrestling with regret in a hair versus hair Texas death match for the Divas Championship. Am I a diva? I mean, you know, Brian Zane, I could see Brian being a little bit of a diva. I kid Brian. We did karaoke in Vegas for the first Double or Nothing a couple of years ago. Brian's a good dude. Boots. Just finished watching Dynamite. I was enjoying the main event, but did not care for the finish. For 2022, what wrestling trope do you want to go away? Kendo sticks. Is that a trope? I'm making it a trope. Kendo sticks should go away. Again, Yavani dropping that 120 bomb on me. You are a beast, my friend. I don't know what else to say. You blew me away with that. You made my night. Christos Kalansis, thanks for the great content, Solomonster. Thank you, sir. Spanish Goddess, a little bit nervous. I have my exam to become a correctional officer in 16 days. How about that? Spanish Goddess is going to become the big boss man. Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck. I'm sure you're going to ace the exam. You're going to be fine. You're going to get your nightstick. You're going to do just fine. Fire Panda, I'm lucky I only get SmackDown. Yeah, well, I got news for you. SmackDown hasn't been that great recently either. Only saving grace with SmackDown is it's 2 hours instead of three. It's a little bit better, at least. And Dried Chicken Without Flavor is the final super chat here for now. Usually they pop up on me again, but Dried Chicken says, what wrestling match made you say, throw the damn towel like Rocky IV? Rock and Mankind at the Royal Rumble in 99. Even then, when you had chair shots to the head and hardcore stuff being done, I mean, midway through that, it was uncomfortable to watch. And it was like, enough already. It's like Jim Ross in the Hell in a Cell match, you know? Enough's enough. Stop the match. For me, it was the I Quit match at the Rumble in 99. It was too much. They went way overboard with that. All right. I enjoyed that tune. Shout out to Carl Casey, who has all of that badass music on his channel. See, what did I say? Made a couple more super chats just pop up here. Fire Panda, by the way, that super chat you see on your screen, I got a shout out for Waz. Right behind Roman Reigns is that awesome Solomonster Sounds Off logo sign. That was in Saudi Arabia. And he has that's the sign of the year for the podcast. You couldn't get better placement. You could not get better placement for a sign behind the top star in the company halfway around the world. That was so awesome to see that. Fire Panda says, favorite WWE pay-per-view. King of the Ring 93, I think, is my overall favorite. Although I love the first ECW One Night Stand. Even though it was WWE produced, that I still look at that as almost like more of an ECW show. King of the Ring 93, I think, is my favorite. And by the way, you talk about two totally different pay-per-views. You go from King of the Ring 93 to ECW One Night Stand 05. But I love them both. And Drew Johnson, drinking a beer, enjoying the stream, and digging the music, my friend. I'm glad you enjoy. Thank you, Casey is Raw. Thank you for the compliment. We do a little something here called Be the Booker. As you guys know, it is one of our features on all of the AEW streams. We usually keep it to AEW. It kind of became the AEW thing. And we do a little rando booking here to see if I could book a better match for the main event of WrestleMania than Vince McMahon can. Most of the time, the answer is no. We've booked some pretty horrible ones, but we're gonna give it a go here and see what we come up with here on this first day of December. We'll start with the men. And our first pick is Roderick Strong, the reigning NXT Cruiserweight Champion. Robert Shelton in the chat. What's up, sir? Moonlight Bunny just subscribed. I wonder if Moonlight Bunny is from the ranch. It's one of the places I missed on my last trip to Vegas. I'll have to add that to the list the next time I head out there to the desert. So we got Roderick Strong in the main event of WrestleMania. I mean, Roddy's a great wrestler and all, but I could already see this is going to a bad place. Roderick Strong one-on-one with his papa. Papa H. What do you think about that as the main event of WrestleMania? Triple H one-on-one against Roderick Strong. It's an interesting match, but for a WrestleMania main event, I think you guys know where this is headed. It just doesn't work for me, brother. It just doesn't. I can't. I can't wrap my head around that being a WrestleMania main event. I'm sorry. That is a buzzer-worthy match. Even if we go with Triple H from like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, in his prime, that ain't no WrestleMania main event. See if we have better luck with the ladies. Do one with the men. We got to do one with the women. Although I will say, you know, there is a story that you could tell there with the whole NXT connection. Let's see who we got. Over on the ladies' side, we begin with Naomi. Sonya Deville's not going to like that. Naomi in the women's WrestleMania main event going one-on-one. Oh, man, if Sonya comes up, what a... Can you imagine? I don't even know if she's in this GIF. I don't think she is. Naomi against Trish Stratus as a women's WrestleMania main event. You know what? I'm gonna allow it. I'm not gonna go with the buzzer on that one. I think for a women's main event, not the best. I don't think that's buzzer worthy. I can't be buzzer worthy when it comes to Trish. I can't bring myself to do that. I'll allow that. But Triple H and Roderick Strong, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Fire Panda says, would you rather watch Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania 24 or Shawn Michaels against Undertaker at 25 for the... Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania 24? They didn't wrestle at WrestleMania 24. I don't know what you're trying to ask. Well, I'll answer the second half. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, WrestleMania 25, is the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. Ergo, it is one of the greatest matches in the history of that company, since it is the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. And I say that as a huge fan of Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13, as a huge fan of the first Hell in a Cell with Michaels and Undertaker. Those two just had tremendous chemistry together in the ring. Okay, so he I thought that might have been the mistake that he made. He said he meant 25 or 26. Obviously, I would go with 25. 26 was also very good, but it wasn't 25. 25 was the better of the two matches, I think. Eric Decker, one of our channel members, says, funny thing is that Trish is coming back. I saw that. Trish is not wrestling, but Trish is going to be hosting. Because WWE is coming to Canada. I assume it must be Toronto. For a house show, I think it's in a few weeks. And she is going to be the special guest host. But I don't believe she is going to be wrestling. Nia's Hole. Should I keep Nia's Hole as one of the Super Chat photos? Should we retire it now that Nia is retired from the ring? I guess we'll keep her whole. We'll keep her whole so we remember her by it. We have something to remember her by. Yeah, the WrestleMania 25 match is the one with the dive where Undertaker almost broke his neck. I actually think it kind of added to the match, to the drama of the match. I mean, thank God he didn't break his neck. He didn't get paralyzed. That would have put a damper on things. But I think it actually kind of adds to the mystique and the legend of the match. Fire Panda has a similar question. Undertaker Triple H at WrestleMania 27 or Undertaker Triple H at WrestleMania 28? You know, I enjoyed I was there live for the Hell in a Cell match at 28. And one of the greatest near falls that I've ever seen in my entire life was the super kick into the pedigree in that Hell in a Cell match. That was tremendous. The entire stadium, as someone who was in the stadium, everybody bought into that. Even though you came into the match knowing Undertaker's not losing at WrestleMania to Triple H, that spot was genius, and everybody bought into it. So that was the highlight of that match. But I enjoyed the match at 27 more. I think I'm more of a fan of the actual match at 27 than I am 28. So, I mean, which one would I want to watch for the rest of my life? I don't want to watch either one of those for the rest of my life. But I think I enjoyed 27 more than 28. Tech Nation says he was at 27. My condolences. Because outside of that match, there wasn't a whole lot really good to speak of. I guess Punk and Randy Orton had a good match. But yeah, that WrestleMania was not... The replay value is next to nothing on that WrestleMania. 27 is one of the worst WrestleManias they've ever done. Psycho Boys, I'd like to think so, man, but WWE just seems to have lost their way. I think if we spend our time comparing it to kind of the good old days, it'll never be as good. I think we have to let that go. You know, I want to judge them based on what they do today, and I just want to judge them based on, are they putting out a product that's interesting and exciting with characters that are interesting to watch on TV and writing that doesn't look like it was written by a bunch of six-year-olds? The bar is set very low, and somehow they're still unable to leap over it. It's frustrating, but I would not compare it to the old days, because it will never meet your expectations if that's what you're going to compare it to. Dry Chicken, the entire WWE creative should be arrested for what they did to Toni Storm last Friday. Yeah, if you want to know what I thought of the Toni Storm segment on SmackDown last week, you can find the clip. It's here on the channel, actually. I let you know in great detail what I thought of that segment. And look, Toni may show up on SmackDown this week and she may get her revenge on Charlotte Flair. It doesn't change the fact that what they did in that segment by having her stand there and get pied in the face twice without even so much as reacting is inexcusable. Inexcusable. I don't care if she comes out on television this Friday and dumps a bucket of green slime on Charlotte's head. She slimes her like Nickelodeon. And gets her revenge. She still looked like an idiot. You should never book your baby faces to look like an idiot. It's the worst thing that you can do. It's one of the reasons why they've had so much trouble booking strong baby faces in this company. They all look like a bunch of morons. They don't know how to book baby faces. Hey, Riley Archer dropped $4.99. What is your opinion on worked shoot angles? Personally, I find using backstage drama and insider vocabulary risks confusing and deterring some fans. It is a risk. Absolutely, it's a risk. You have casual fans who don't know what some of the terminology is, and sometimes it could go over their head. I think the way to do a work shoot, you can work in some of that language and some of that stuff that will appeal to that segment of your audience, but if you have enough good stuff in there that everybody, when that segment is over, everybody is reacting to it, then you've pulled off a major success, because you can appeal to multiple audiences in one segment. When the segment is over, you could have everybody saying, man, that was awesome. Even if, you know, Joey over here doesn't know what you meant by using some of the terms that you use, but Joey thought, man, that really felt real. That was really great. And then Felipe over here is a so-called smart fan. He understood everything that you said, and he looked at it a little bit differently and said, oh, man, they were shooting. Oh, man, I know what they were talking about there. And boy, you know, that was really awesome. You could appeal to different audiences at the same time if you have the right people who do a good job of pulling it off. Not everybody can pull it off. Sometimes it comes off as very forced. Sometimes it doesn't come off as authentic. I think you want to have, you want to set limits on how much of that stuff you put in there. AEW does tend to go overboard when it comes to using certain, you know, and Dan Lambert was doing a lot of this when Dan Lambert was on TV cutting all those promos. Dan Lambert is a great promo. I mean, he yells and screams a lot, but he delivers it in a convincing way and doesn't lose his train of thought. Like, he's good, But it got to the point where it's like every week he's dropping these insider terms, trying too hard to be Jim Cornette, and it got corny after a while. So you got to strike that right balance. Terrence Toussaint was at Dynamite tonight. Good show, but got exhausting after taping 4 hours of content. Dark, Dynamite, and Rampage. And Fire Panda. Please don't hate me, but would you rather watch a disco match or watch a Nancy Disgrace interview? They can have each other for all I care. I don't have any interest in either one of them. Although disco's music in WCW was the shit. He had a great theme song in WCW. I will give him that. Miz on Talking Smack. That's a great example of what we were just talking about. That Miz promo on Talking Smack. You know, not everybody probably watched that and really knew what he was talking about, but he pulled it off with such conviction, the way he delivered it, like looked straight into the camera, and the way Brian sort of stormed, or, you know, Daniel, as he was, stormed off set. Like, that was a quality segment that accomplished exactly what it set out to do. When you can pull off a segment like that, you've done something right. Uncle Buzz, look at the Taker. Taker doing the old Bailey Buddy entrance. One of my favorite super chats. Uncle Buzz dropping $4. $5 Canadian. Who do you feel is the Mount Rushmore of Canadian wrestlers? And is Jericho a top 10 all-time wrestler in your opinion? Jericho has... Boy, you know, Jericho has done everything there is to do. And Jericho deserves a lot of props for it. No matter what you think of him now, look at the body of work that Jericho has put together. Look at all of the different places that he has worked. All of the success that he has had in Japan, in Mexico, before he even hit it big. And then, you know, he was in ECW briefly, but then WCW, and then WWE, and then going to AEW late in his career, and being the champion there. And all the things that he's done, all the championships, all the big stars and big names he's worked with, he definitely is in, he's in the conversation. Is he in my top 10 all time? Probably not. Would he be in my top 20? Probably. I don't have it in front of me. I don't think he makes my top 10. I'd have to think about that. If he doesn't make my top 10, though, it's close. Because what Jericho has accomplished, he has done stuff that not a lot of people have done. And he has had a lot of longevity in his career. More longevity than even The Rock and Stone Cold and names that were bigger than him. And he's had success everywhere he's gone. So you can't discount that. The fact that the match he had with Kenny Omega in New Japan a few years ago, the fact that that was the inspiration behind Tony Khan wanting to start AEW. AEW may not exist today were it not for that match taking place. Jericho was part of that. I mean, that's going to be a major chapter in the history of this company. And Jericho went over there and went to New Japan and had a big match at Wrestle Kingdom that did big business. Can't ignore that. But my personal top 10, I don't know if he makes the cut. As far as a Canadian Mount Rushmore, Brett obviously is on it. Brett is on it. Jericho is on it. You know, there have been so many wrestlers from Canada, I feel like I'm missing somebody. It's easy to say Brett, Owen, Jericho. Who would that fourth person be? Canadian Mount Rushmore. I'd have to think about that. So I know I'm missing people. I'm missing some names who are from Canada. Brett, as far as I'm concerned, more than his father and whoever else you want to put on there. Brett's in the number one spot for me. Bar none, no question, more than Jericho, more than almost anybody else. Brett would be in that top spot. You know, You've got other people, I guess, like Edge. You've got Edge. You've got Benoit. Benoit is going to be a very polarizing one for a lot of people. But, you know, Benoit, it's hard not to put him on there. You know, we're not talking Hall of Fame, but we're talking his place in history among the best of the best Canadian wrestlers. How does Benoit not end up on there? Look at Edge. Look at the body of work that Edge has put together. Look at the body of work that Kenny Omega has put together. See, I knew I forgot some names. So when you have Brett and Owen and Jericho and Omega and Benoit and Edge, who I think I mentioned already, and you try to narrow it down to just four of them, boy, that's a tough one. Christian, I'm sorry, Christian doesn't make the cut. Christian's great, but Christian does not, of the names I just mentioned, they're gonna get top billing over Christian Cage. Piper, do you count Piper, though? Would you count Piper, though, as Canadian? I know he's got some roots there, but I don't know. I don't know if I would count him as on the Canadian Mount Rushmore. I think I might go Brett, and this is not in any particular order, but, you know, Brett, Jericho. I'm inclined to say Brett, Jericho, Edge, and Omega. I think that might be my four. It's tough. It's tough. That's a good question, actually. I've never thought of it in terms of just Canadian Mount Rushmore. Fire Panda, AEW, what will get them to the level of WWE? Or he says they will get to the level, but they will not overtake the empire Vince has built. Look, the telltale sign will be when the TV contracts come due. WWE is going to get a big fat TV contract again. Doesn't matter how bad Raw gets, they're going to get a big fat TV deal. They're going to make even more money than they're making now. How much more money does AEW get? That's what I'm curious about. And do they stay with TNT or do they go somewhere else? The story that is going to play out in the next two and a half years is going to be the biggest, outside of a WWE sale, that will be the biggest story in wrestling to follow over these next 2 years. How the TV contract situation plays out, and how it plays out as far as AEW, does it impact WWE? Because their contracts are coming due around the same time. Is there going to be a network that looks at, you know, the meme that you see online sometimes with the guy who's walking with the woman, but he's looking at the woman with the nice ass behind him? You could do a meme like that where, you know, you've got whatever television network is in the middle and they're holding WWE's hand, but they're looking behind and they're thinking, man, AEW's got a pretty big ass. I mean, that's the story that is going to play out potentially in a couple of years, and it could have a very big impact on the landscape of how wrestling looks 5 years from now. Are those TV deals. But again, GM, thank you for that $5 super chat. And Fire Panda, thank you for that one. Let me make sure I didn't miss anybody before those. Yeah, just Fire Panda's last one here. As a Canuck, my Canadian Mount Rushmore, I would put the entire Hart family. Some people would do that. Some people would just take all the Hart family members, Brett, Owen. Well, I mean, you can't include Bulldog. So what, I mean, would you include Bruce? Stu? I guess Stu, right? You'd almost have to put Stu's face on there first if you're doing the Hart family. What about Jimmy? Don't we count Jimmy Hart? Does Jimmy Hart get no love? I guess Jimmy wasn't Canadian. Jimmy came up in Memphis. Lance Storm. Lance Storm is a great Canadian. But Lance Storm does not make the Mount Rushmore. All right, I think we are all caught up on things, and I think that we are just about at that point where we should probably wrap up here and call it quits. This has been a fun stream tonight. Some really good questions in the super chats. Again, thank you for keeping it more focused and more serious, because I know things got a little out of hand with some of the goofy ones. Again, everybody's just having fun, but you know, you can imagine people on the audio, for example, who were listening to this the next morning going, what the... some of these questions that you're reading. So we'll try to avoid those going forward. By all means, you know, drop them. I love the Super Chat love, and I will shout out and acknowledge each and every single one of you. But some of the crazier ones I might just read to myself and just give you a quick answer, because we have a lot of wrestling-related ones that we want to make sure we get to. So we got some really good ones tonight. We got one more here. Fire Panda says yes. He was referring to, just in general, every single member of the Hart family. So the Harts are wrestling royalty in Canada. There's no doubt about that. Pat Patterson, yes, Pat Patterson was a damn good wrestler. Pat Patterson had a tremendous mind for the business. Anybody who knew him, worked with him, would tell you that. M1 Biggie Max says, for me, it is Brett, Edge, Christian, and Jericho. It's not a bad foursome. I just think for me, I would probably swap out Christian with... gosh, you know, I was going to say Omega. You know, it's tough because Christian, when you really look at his body of work, he's another one who had success across multiple promotions. NWA champion while he was working for TNA. Held the Impact title again just recently. He's part of those legendary TLC matches right along with the Hardys and Edge and the Dudleys. World heavyweight champion. One of the more underrated names, I think, as far as people who were world champion, but again, they're not kind of looked at as top stars. Christian's great. But does Christian rise to the level of a Mount Rushmore? You only got four spots. Remember that. Mount Rushmore, the whole thing is you only got four spots on there. So if you're limiting it to four, does Christian make the cut? Does he make the cut of the final four on a Mount Rushmore? And that's tougher. Because there are other people who are much bigger stars than he was. So for me, he doesn't make that cut. But, you know, I'm not going to say that you're wrong. I'm forgetting Jinder Mahal. Is that right, Juan Ocampo? No, Jinder's a little further down the list. And Fire Panda says to Salamasa in the chat, thank you for making the eve of my birthday that much better. See you all on Sunday. So that's a good reminder. I will be live on Friday, as usual, for the Rampage stream, but I will be live on Sunday night as well for the NXT War Games review. And of course, before that, episode 733 of the podcast will be dropping on all the usual audio platforms on Sunday afternoon, so watch for that. It could be at any time. There's no set time. It could be 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Now, probably in that mid-afternoon range, it'll be popping up on your feeds. We had a bunch of new channel members sign up tonight. So if you are new to the channel as a channel member, or if you're a channel member and just haven't been paying attention, a brand new RSPW Rewind is up. Why did RSPW hate The Rock so much? I did a little bit of digging. See what people were talking about. Why such hate for The Rock back in 2000? A lot of good posts I was able to dig up. So that episode right now is exclusive to our channel members. It will be public for everybody else on Friday, but I wanted to give it to you guys first for the first 3 days. So that is up right now. It's over half an hour long. Do check that out. Uncle Buzz dropping $4. I've wanted to ask you that question for a long time. Been a fan for years. Thank you, brother. I almost stumped the Solo Monster. Almost. Yes, you did. Almost. Almost, but not quite. We'll have to create a new segment here on the show. Stump the Solo Monster. But thank you, Uncle Buzz. All right, I'm going to get out of here. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you for all the Super Chat love and... all the great chatting going on in the live chat here. And again, join me on Friday night for the Rampage stream, and again on Sunday for NXT War Games. Until then, have a good night. Take care, guys.